You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Paul Cox, and now we're talking.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Integrated 2015 conference in Antwerp, Belgium. It's November 27 and our guest is Paul Cox. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have a general first question, which is, are you religious?
Thanks God, no.
Thank God, no. That's a good one.
Especially in this day and age.
So I'm not far from believing that religion is some sort of a disaster, no? Otherwise, no, I'm not a religious man.
And do you have rituals?
Yes, a lot.
Yeah? I'm curious. Yeah. Can you share some of them?
Which are mostly linked to work. I mean, I need sort of rituals to put myself in the mood for working easily. And they have to do with, namely, when I draw, I like drawing always on the same kind of size of paper. And well, of course, this changes sometimes. There are breaks in those rituals, but I like to not to have to hinder about difficult choices in the beginning. I mean, if choices of size, tool, etc. are okay, then I can freely improvise on this first choice. It's both a ritual, but it has a functional background.
And if it goes slightly, if you don't have the right paper, you feel like you cannot start?
No, of course not. I mean, I wouldn't choose not to do it on the right paper, but if a wrong paper comes by accident, it's usually good because I have to cope with it.
And are you superstitious?
No. Oh, yes. It depends. For instance, in love affairs, I've been a great amateur of those kinds of things where you ask the meaning of an egg you break, and if the yellow breaks or not, it may have a meaning concerning your chances to seduce someone or something like that, or tossing coins. Well, it's mostly with when I break an egg.
So you're at a bar, you see somebody, and you think, You order an egg, and then you say, is this going to work?
More or less. Well, it's more on long-term things, but it's that, yeah. That's
really?
Yeah.
Does you break an egg, and if it doesn't work out, do you think this person is not for me?
Yes, but I also have, of course, a second chance, or a third chance, or a fourth chance, if the yellow breaks.
But it's only applicable to love affairs, to love.
Yes. Yes.
And why do you think is that? That you have this superstitious feeling as
How
soon
did it
as
start?
Like somebody
yeah.
else is. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's. I need this in this realm because it's probably the most difficult things I have to cope with. Otherwise, I can do my choices alone. But there, I need some supernatural guidance in the form of.
Do you tell this to the person? Like, you say, I'm sorry.
No, never. Crazy.
You're the crazy
not.
Person.
I yes.
I'm like, I just broke up with you because that egg just didn't go quite right.
No. Actually, the only way it works, since I told you, when it's negative, I always give myself extra choices, extra chances. It's rather the other way around. When it works, when the yellow doesn't break, it means it's going to work, so it gives me some needed confidence in myself. It's a stupid, I know. We can speak of something else if you like.
No, I think let's spend 1 hour about this.
You were born in Paris?
Yes.
But your last name is not really like a French last name.
No, my father was Dutch, in fact, it's a Dutch name. But my parents settled in Paris when they were students and they never left.
But sorry, it's not that I want to talk about the egg, but this idea, it's almost like a game or a it's a playing.
Yes.
Which I think that is very much related also to the way you work or your projects itself.
Of course, yeah.
And is that always, were you always interested in games as a kid? You wanted to design it? How did it start?
No, I think, I don't really know. Desire was to be a musician, and I think I wanted to be a composer, in fact, and I played violin from a very early age. And I think that through music, I understood how important rules can be, rules of a game, or constraints, or frame can be important to allow for kind of free improvisation. That's the origin of it. And then I tried to adopt this to visual arts, which was my second choice after music, which I gave up, in fact.
Why did you give up the music?
Because my parents were musicians, and I wanted to do something else, something different. And also I thought it was a really too difficult life, really. They had a very, very difficult life.
Well, it's a good you didn't become an accountant. I mean, that could also be the anti...
That was quite out of the question.
Yeah.
You seem to switch... you do poster design, you do illustration, you know, these... do you feel the need to sort of alter your ways while you're in your career?
I'm a little bit careless about my career. I mean, I don't have a career, actually. And I do care about doing what I feel an impulse for. And since I'm still very curious, maybe this is going to change with age, but I'm attracted by many things, and I'm attracted by things I'm not familiar to, or by things I cannot do, and I'd like to try them. Of course, often I need some exterior invitation to do this. I wouldn't spontaneously start a building, make a building or something. This is, of course, ridiculous. But often I have accepted commissions for things I'd never done, like stage design or things like that, or even graphic design. I mean, I've never learned that. So that is one of the reasons I do those many things, and the main reason being the pleasure of trying many different things, which in fact are not so different, because they all pertain to the big chapter of visual art. I mean, I think it's very, very important to cross borders between those very close fields. I mean, it's very close, in fact. For instance, even when I do many stage designs for ballet, and so I'm getting very familiar with dance, modern dance, and this is very important for me too for my own work. I mean, I think it's essential to go and feed yourself even in science, or literature, poetry, dance, architecture. And
but you don't have a particular choice. There's not one.
Well, yes, there is one, which is in fact central to me in the first, at the beginning of it all, which is painting, simply. I mean, when people ask me what I do, even if it's not the most visible part of my work, I answer, I'm a painter. That's really the center of it all. And all the rest, in fact, is... at the origin, I mean, the first jobs I did in graphic design or illustration, etc., were really to make a living. I mean, it was not a real, it was not my first vocation, but I very very quickly I took great interest in this, and I took great interest in doing both, in doing commissioned works, works in different domains, together with painting, because I observed that there was a mutual nourishment between the two, or the three, or the four.
Yeah, but for you, what is the biggest difference for you between illustration then and painting? Like, what is it a different, completely different mindset? Or?
Well, it depends on what kind of illustration we speak of, but I'd say that, well, there's one thing I've never done, really, which is illustrating someone else's text for a book or a long story. This I've never done because I think I wouldn't really like to do this, and I'm not sure to be able to do that.
Why? Why is that?
No, I'd be able to do that, but I don't, because I've been doing books of my own, I mean, of the text of which I wrote, and so I think I really prefer that for a simple reason. It's that I avoid writing about things I can't draw, and if I illustrated other people's books, I would be confronted to very difficult things to draw. That's a bad idea, of course, that's not the reason, but... So illustration for books of my own, this I consider really very close to my painting. I mean, although it's not the same vocabulary, etc. But illustrating someone else's text is the only difference in my eye is that there is a very stronger outside impulse which is given by the work you are to illustrate. That's the only difference. So. When in retrospect I, because the only kind of illustration I practice, in fact, is stage design, which is considered very close to illustration. When you design a set for a narrative ballet, for instance.
But it's not a book, but that is also an external influence.
Yes, so, that's what I say. I mean, it's really like illustration for me. So that is the only kind of illustration which is close to someone else's book I would illustrate. It's set designs for a ballet, for instance. What I mean is in retrospect, when I compare things I do completely on my own and things which are created with an external impulse, the first ones somehow are dearer to me. I like the first ones more because they really come from inside, I think. Which doesn't mean they're better, or it's just a personal feeling of affection for those ones.
And where, I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but then where do you seek your inspiration? Where does it, when you say it comes from within, what are your...
Well,
Your heroes, who are you? Yeah, or...
I have so many. I think when you like what you do, you like many things. But I can be more precise. My hero now is a painter, is Villard. I'm looking at Villard a lot, and I think he's a very important painter for nowadays. I think there are lots of things to be discovered and analyzed in Villard. But I could make a long list. I mean, I have lots and lots of heroes, which mostly belong to the field of painting. And mostly also probably 19th century painting, from young Corot to old Degas, let's say.
Okay. And sorry, do you teach?
No.
No. Is that something that you ever consider? Or?
No. I mean, I've been asked a few times, but I think I have developed a rhythm of work which wouldn't leave any place for teaching. The few times I have given workshops or things like that, I felt it required such an involvement of energy and time that I had to sacrifice a lot of work, and I thought it was not really worth it. Except probably for the students, well, if they had some benefit from it, but this I don't know, we should ask them.
No, I'm also looking at your work. Color seems to be the biggest, most, like not most impressive. Of course, all your work is very impressive, but with that, the color is something that I also don't forget. Like that, throughout all your work, and then there's one project about color that is all in black and white.
Yes, yes, yes.
What I'm curious how that project came about.
That's a crazy story. It's a friend, a Belgian friend, who is a publisher, a gallerist, who publishes bibliophilie books, like very posh things, precious, and only in black. So he asked me please make me a project in black. Mm-hmm. And but I hope he doesn't listen to this, because what I'm going to say is not very kind. But it's a joke, in fact. I knew that his choice was not an aesthetic choice, but more an economic choice. I mean, much cheaper to make a black book than a four-color book. And so I was little, I wanted to tease him and make the most bizarre thing I could do in black. And so I came up with the idea of this book, which is, in fact, simply a quotation from it's a mixture of quotations from Johannes Itten's book on color and Joseph Albers' Interaction of Color, so plus a few jokes at the end, which I simply translated in black and white with a system of grids which are variously oriented or variously dense, and which very carefully transcribe the four-color process. Mm-hmm. And when I gave him the book, of course I quote the famous experiments on successive contrast, when you know the well-known thing, when you look at the green circle for a while and then you shift your eyes to empty white circle, and then you're supposed to see a red circle appear. So I reproduced this in black and white. And when my friend looked at it, he said very seriously, try the thing, and he said it works. So I was very happy. That's the origin of it.
Yeah.
The abstract alphabet is also something I was really, being a type designer and coming from the type world, it's really like, where did that start?
Well, I know exactly. I'm going to speak of that during the lecture later on. It was a very important moment for me. I was obsessed a little bit with the rules of games and things like that. And at that time, I was making work, a mural collage with big elements in cutouts in wood, which looked like the shapes I use in the abstract alphabet. And at one point, I was really despaired because it looked nice, etc., but it was too good taste, and I was really blocked with this. And so I had the idea, all of a sudden, to play a game and to transform. I chose 26 of those shapes and made an alphabet out of them, arbitrarily giving one letter to one shape. And then I started making compositions which spelt out words or names on the wall or in 3D on like standing sculptures. And this simply chased the block away. I mean, suddenly I could move again fluently. It was a very simple thing, but it's as if I suddenly had put aside my, like the walls of my good taste or something, or something too rational. I was so happy with this that I continued for a long time using this system with other kind of alphabets, but always alphabetical codes, I mean, for making images.
And do you start with connecting the specific letters to the specific shapes? Is that the first thing you do, or does that follow when
No,
you start?
No, this was completely, you mean in the when I created the alphabet?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That was really, I don't remember exactly, but it was really by chance. I mean, I chose the 26 best-looking shapes, and I think I simply gave them the letters in the order in which they came on my table, right, or yeah, something like that. There's absolutely no relation between
No.
Okay. But the only voluntary thing is that I avoided not too good-looking shapes for the most usual letters. I mean, the E was especially nice, or the A too, and maybe the K was not so good.
But you were almost creating a Paul Cox world, like if you were, because you have your your own alphabet. You have it's a different a parallel reality.
Yes,
dream
I
world.
Think so. I think yeah. so because even in I thought that just before of I made a book a few years ago about my own work, which was not a spontaneous initiative, but I was invited or pushed to do this, and conditions were present to allow for this, and so I couldn't resist, of course, the idea of doing this. And My inspiration for that was Dubuffet, who I think from his 50s or a bit earlier, he started publishing what he called the fascicules, like the booklets. And he published sometimes two or three a year, to rather ugly books printed black and white, like A4 size. But the interesting thing is that he, in those books, he published his work as soon as it was done, and sometimes even before he exhibited it. So that he considered the book and the printed thing as a first exhibition space, which I thought very, he was the first to do that. I mean, it was a very logical and clever way to come behind Benjamin. I mean, this was my fantasy, to do something like that. And just to come back to your question, it has to do with the idea to somehow to control everything, not in, of course, in a totalitarian mind, but probably because I've kept something, well, it's a bit stupid to say that, but I think I've remained a kind of solitary child with his mm-hmm. toys in his room, and that's a little bit how I feel and how I live.
And do you test this also with, do you invite children in this?
No.
Because we make a lot of, also you write mm-hmm. Children books,
yeah.
Or do you see how they interact with this?
Not much. I have no children, so sometimes I see my neighbors or friends' mm-hmm. children or my nephews, etc., who I think do like it, but then I don't, it's always tricky because their reactions are, I mean, they know me, they know the family, etc., so I don't know if they're really just being polite. But that's a bit, I don't know, I don't know children very well. I'm a bit scared about children because I don't know them really.
Mm-hmm. So but you strange. Do write children's books, though. You consider them as children's books, or they're labeled
no,
as such?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes and no. It's they're published in this box called children's books, and of course I think it's very my first idea when I did the first books was it's a long time ago, and context was very different from now. Now we have enormously very good books for children, which wasn't the case when I was in my 20s, in France at least. The offer was very limited and not so good. So I felt I was amazed that no artists, I mean, if we keep these narrow terms, I mean, no fine artists made children's books. I mean, they were always specialized authors for children's books or illustrators. And I knew of no painter who did this. The only artist I knew who once made a collection of children's books published them under a pseudonym. So I thought this very strange, as if it were a shame to make this. And so I felt it a bit like a responsibility to make, not a missionary, but I thought, it, why not make children's books? Like at that time, I was very much interested in the constructivists, and I thought, well, all their attitude towards giving away painting and making posters or graphic design, I thought extremely interesting. And so I wanted to do a bit, it was not the same context, of course, but I felt like doing a bit the same thing with making children's books. Mm-hmm. But I think that I've always tried to make children's books which I hope offered some kind of appeal or interest for adults. I mean, even when I made some long narrative things, which are very naive or funny, I hope, I don't know. But I think there's always a background of something a little bit serious behind it.
And you were commissioned stamps for the Royal Mail. Weren't you?
This is extremely amusing because it's my homonym. I have a homonym in England who makes a totally different work.
They also stood out. So I'm like,
yeah, it's extremely different. I hope one day to do something together. That would be great fun.
Yeah, Paul Coxes.
But no, I didn't.
You
didn't.
It
was the other one.
No, that's the end of that.
I could have said yes.
It seems so strange.
Different.
I really sort of.
He does those very he makes watercolors, like illustrations, and which are always very, very wavy, and it's quite interesting. It's not at all my world, but it's interesting.
Yeah, that's why you were talking about. Like, yeah. I don't know what you're.
Okay. And she looked at me like very. She didn't understand what I was
talking about.
Like, yeah, it's really strange because they look so different than the rest of his work. And I thought that maybe like the technical limitations of the printing process would steer you in that sort of. You
I've never seen those stamps. Next time I'll
a completely
say yes,
different
maybe.
Person. All right. Is there something? Is there a project? A dream project? Project that you would
yes.
really love to do?
Yes. Yes, I'd like to make a set for a Mozart opera, but I know the title in French is L'Enlèvement au Sérail, the thing which takes place in Turkey with fantastic costumes and extravagant hats. And this I'd like to do. And I'd also like to make a set for Pelléas and Mélisande. That's my two dreams, and otherwise my dearest dream is to make the paintings I still have inside and which I've never succeeded in making, but I think they're not so far. They
so you make a sort of a mental painting before you actually is
no.
that always like
no not at all on the contrary but I know I have. I could describe with words, which of course have nothing to do with shapes, but I could describe with words how my ideal painting looks like. And this is what I've been trying to do for many years, but I need some work still.
And your biggest fear?
Maybe to become blind. This I wouldn't like too much. Oh. Yeah, well, suddenly not to be interested in anymore in painting, or yes, maybe Alzheimer.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Nice way to end the last
question. How would you like to be remembered?
Well, I'd answer a little sideways. I wouldn't like to be completely forgotten. I'd like to succeed in. No, I think there's something very important. I'm very attached to the notion of tradition in art. I mean, I know the importance of breaks sometimes, but also I'm very, very much interested in the way people sometimes go back to the past to make a big step forward. Like, two examples come to my mind, but which are really important. Cézanne, for instance, or Manet. Who didn't at all have the ambition to be avant-garde or whatever. They just wanted to do as well as Velázquez or Poussin. And doing so, turning their back for Cézanne to the Impressionists and going to see back Poussin allowed him to suddenly discover something which was very new and at the same time very timeless. I've lost the thread. What are you saying?
How would you like to be remembered? Was the question?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would like to have to somehow be one of the elements of this big chain somehow. That would be great. I mean, something which has to do with the past and which allows for an opening to the future. But that's very ambitious. I mean, if it's I don't mind, in fact. I just work and as best as I can.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So much. Thank you.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.